This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org. 10 Radio.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Somerset is go!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Somerset Go. My name is Julian Mellor, and Somerset Go is 10 Radio's weekly look at how the recession is impacting on businesses here in Somerset. The programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund, which was created to support organisations such as 10 Radio that help local communities and deal with the effects of the economic recession. Well, today we're going to be looking at the food and drink industry in Somerset to find out how it has been faring in these difficult times. I've been joined in the studio by the owners of three businesses here in Wiveliscombe to talk about how they're surviving. And we'll also be hearing from John Sheaves, the Chief Executive of Taste of the West, and David Baker, Managing Director of Styles Ice Cream at Rod Hewish near Minehead. But first, just to get us warmed up, here is a little touch of music from Kirsty MacColl. Welcome back to Somerset Is Go, where we're going to be spending the next hour examining the food and drink industry in Somerset and how it has been faring in the recession. Somerset obviously has a long tradition of creating world-famous brands, cheddar cheese and Somerset cider being just two. And it's a sector that has some extremely large producers, but also many, many small producers, some of whom are making very innovative products and finding new ways to market them. But the financial collapse in 2008 has not bypassed Somerset, so we wanted to find out how business has been faring. I've been joined in the studio today by Sally Edwards, who is owner of Ten the Square in Wiveliscombe, Guy Wilkes, owner of the Wine Shed in Wiveliscombe, and Heather Harvey, owner of the Larder and of the Bear here in Wiveliscombe. And Sally, I think you've had a background in other catering type businesses as well, so it's not just Ten the Square. You have a history in the sector,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah.
And Guy, you have a background in...
I have a history.
You
yeah.
have a history in the wine sector, outside of just retailing in Wiveliscombe and wholesale retailing.
I do, yeah.
Let's talk first about how the recession has impacted on your businesses. Sally, I think you opened your doors in 2008, didn't you? Which maybe wasn't the best of timing.
It probably wasn't, but... I mean, from that point of view, I'm not quite sure how it would have differed had I not opened then. So for me, that's sort of a difficult one to judge. Sort of having always had businesses in Taunton, coming out to Wiveliscombe, I don't know whether I can compare what effect sort of opening then would have had it been a slightly better time. But, you know, so that's quite an interesting other sort of way of looking at it, really. So I sort of went in at the worst time, so... it couldn't have got any worse, so it can only get better, really, hopefully.
So
that's sort of my that's my take on it anyway.
Yeah. And Guy, what about you? How you opened round about the same time, I think.
A little bit before.
Mm. But I suppose I always laugh, actually, because I mean, lots of people say to me, the trouble with your business is that it's a lifestyle business, and I'm never quite sure whether to be insulted by that or because I don't really want it to be a lifestyle business. I actually wanted to be a successful business. But it's interesting, because, I mean, I've been affected... I set out to wholesale to hotels and restaurants, and the retail side of it actually came as a secondary thing, because I couldn't get a loan from any bank, and still can't, actually... So not even an overdraft. So from a cash flow point of view, you know, I'm absolutely strapped. So actually, owning the building that I'm in and I run the shop from, I didn't actually set out to retail. I've ended up retailing purely by accident, because I needed cash. And so I decided, well, if the bank's not going to lend me cash, then I'm going to have to make cash work for me. So the shop was actually an incidental. I didn't set out to ever be a retailer of wine. I set out to actually simply supply hotels and restaurants. And actually, had I just carried on that strategy of supplying hotels and restaurants, I probably would have been bust by now, because a lot of my hotel and restaurant customers are trading about 50% where they were a year ago. Some have gone out of business. Many owe me money. So in that respect, the retail side of it has been absolutely imperative. But I've noticed, certainly over the last 3 to 4 months, and whether this is a weather factor or whether it's recession, I can't really tell, but the spend is definitely down. Number of customers is about the same, but I would say the spend is down, and people are looking for a bargain. And actually, it's interesting that I think that the mentality of consumers in this country, compared to, say, if you take somewhere like America, for example. You know, I was talking to somebody about this last night. We went to a dinner party, and they were saying, you know, that in America, people will go, if they're going to go out to eat, if they're going to go to someone's house, they will always take something that they know is recognised as having as a recognised brand, and want to play on that fact that, you know, we've brought something that's really special and amazing and is recognised as being such. Whereas here, we seem to have a mentality of saying, look what I've managed to pick up, this fantastic bargain. And I think that's the difference. And always, this market is very testing in terms of, we're not so brand orientated, although the supermarket is having a good job at turning that around, but we seem to be the type of consumers that are always looking for a fantastic deal, which I guess keeps us, as business operators, always keeps us on our toes. Mm. You know, you've got to be trying to find the next new and fresh and innovative thing to keep the whole thing moving forward.
Okay. And Heather, You've been trading for the longest in Witherlisken by a long way, although, again, the larder is a fairly new enterprise for you, but you've been running the Bear for many years.
We've been in the Bear for 10.5 years, and, again, the first year that we got to the Bear was small, built gradually, and then we hit foot and mouth. So I think our second stroke, third year, we had the foot and mouth crisis, which gave us nil growth. But from then on, for a good 6 or 7 years, we've had year-on-year growth. It's only in the last 2 years where it's levelled or even dipped. And that's mainly because people just aren't coming out. If you've got £20 to spend, you'll either go and buy a nice bottle of wine or have a meal at home, or you come to the pub. And your £20 buys 4 or 5 pints, and a couple of years ago it's buying 6, 7. People are changing their habits at the pub. You either get them out after work or later on in the evening. And of course, the government did us beautifully, pulling the rug under our feet by the smoking ban. Mm. You know, we have the mortgage on it, we owe the banks, hey, we're going to change your trading conditions and going to make it very much worse for us. But we're a bit like Sally. We bought the larder in May 2008, again, probably the worst time, just as when you're completing your sale, you're buying at the property highest prices. Mm. But actually, when you get in there, obviously trade began to slow down, people more price conscious. There's a lot more choice in Witherliscombe now as well, and in surrounding areas with your likes of Asda's and Waitrose's and all the big supermarkets really going for their advertising. So, you know, this larder's wiping its face, we're paying the bills, we're paying the staff, but it's not going to make you really rich.
And I guess in many ways that always applies to businesses in this sort of community. They're fairly relatively small. You're never going to generate the turnover to make yourself rich.
You're paying your bills, you're having a living from it. Like Guy said, you don't do it as a lifestyle. We have a family, we have bills to pay, we have staff that rely on us as well. So you have to make a profit. It's just maybe when you have people like British Gas saying, oh, we've made 50 million but it's down on last year, you know, by 20 million so it's a loss, we're going, we've made a profit, way, we can go on holiday, you know. That's the difference. Maybe that's how we see it. We like Witherliscombe, we like the customers, so you do it as, it's a two-way street. We enjoy the place, hopefully we provide a service and they come back.
And how about the banks? I mean, Guy mentioned there that the banks have been refusing him any leeway whatsoever, no overdraft. How have the banks been treating you, Heather, and you, Sally?
It was quite interesting because we were very lucky because we'd been for the Bear for so long, and when we bought along 99, obviously property prices were down, so we had lots of equity in the Bear, so they were very happy to lend to us. But about a year into the larder, when things were really going nasty for the bank, somebody comes along, oh, we might look at rescheduling your loan, and no, actually, I don't want anything else from you, you know, quite happy with the way it is. Because as soon as they start to lend you something else, oh, but we want to change what you're on, so we're going, no, thank you, we're quite happy, and as long as we can pay our bills, they won't change our conditions. But we haven't gone back to them to ask for anything else.
No, well, I mean, I found that because we've been trying to expand at Tender Square, and which is another thing that you have to try and do as a small business, is constantly change and try and have an add-on. You know, if you're trying to sort of bring more and more customers in, it's trying to sort of add another interest and add something else to your business. And I've been trying for the last several months to try and just have a little bit more borrowing from the bank, because without capital input you can't grow, and so it's, you're in a really difficult position. If you haven't got cash to put in, you can't expand, and therefore you sort of stay as you are, and they're just being absolutely appalling. They're just, you know, and this is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say which bank it is, but anyway, you know, Royal Bank of Scotland.
No, we own them.
Who constantly send you literature about how we want to help small businesses, and it's our aim to do this and do this, and you go and ask for actually a very, very small amount of money, and you have to go through huge lengths to try and then it goes to your dedicated business manager, who then has absolutely no say in what you're doing and doesn't care what you're doing anyway, and then it goes off to Bristol, and then they lose your paperwork, which is what's happened to me somewhere. How that happens I don't know, and in the meantime you're sort of trying to get on and do it because you need to do it, and you don't know whether you're going to get the extra money, and so it's just really very frustrating.
So although you can see a strategy for moving forwards and,
yeah.
and moving onwards. The banks yeah. are the constraint
yeah.
on that happening. And yeah. I guess that's the same for you as well, Guy. That
but it needs this sort of thing that you're actually asking for, right, you know, and you see, again, you see, big. You know, the bigger you are, it seems when you're big, you can set there, we'll give you another, you know, $500,000. But when you're tiny, you know, ask for sort of £3,000 or something, and they'll say, oh, no, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think when when the pressure's on, this is what I was saying earlier about, you know, my own cash flow situation. I mean, when the pressure's on and you are giving credit to customers, when customers are in that same, they're trying to fight to see it, find a way through it, through their own cash crisis. Obviously, you know, I'm being used as a bank effectively, and you know, obviously my trading terms with my customers, are very clear. But at the same time, you know, it's not in my interest to suddenly close the doors as the banks are doing and just simply saying no. You know, we're not going to help you out. As a small business, it's in my interest to make sure that the businesses that I'm supplying survive and grow, because you know then we all grow together. But I feel resentful of the fact that the banks are being so negative. And as you say, the amounts of money that, you know, that businesses like yours and mine are after are actually tiny little pimples on the, in the great equation. And I think it all comes down to the fact that, you know, the autonomy has been taken away from the bank, the small bank manager.
Yeah.
You know, the community-led bank manager, you don't have that anymore, you know, who understands the community that, you know, we're operating in, understands the circumstances, knows the people,
and understands the nature of your business as well, which, you know, I've only recently managed to get my personal bank manager to come and visit and see what I'm doing. You know, that. So, but he doesn't understand catering. He doesn't understand the nature of the business and the fact that it's seasonal and it's slightly and it's dependent on and all these things. And so there is no understanding of what you're doing. And so they're not interested.
So I'm thinking of changing my name to the Royal Bank of Wineshed.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad because...
My interest rates are very low and I'll hope to see you next week.
Really? Please do. But it is very sad that we've seen quite a few small businesses, even that supply the larder, and the Wivy larder tends to have small supplies, well, go out of business purely because of a cash flow or with your pubs. So many pubs, especially around here, have gone out of business because your big two operators, your Punch and your Enterprise, won't reduce their rents, want to take top dollar for the beer, and then the poor licensee or tenant is so squeezed. And only this week I've heard that the White Horse at Bampton's closed again.
Right.
And
right.
This, I mean, you had the Notley Arms
the Notley
closed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear Guy, they don't owe you money, do they?
No, they don't.
The way his eyes just lit up then, I thought, whoops!
No, they don't. But, I mean, I think, you know, it is interesting. I mean, the closures, I mean, that's my biggest fear. And, in fact, it stopped me from growing the business the way I would want to grow it, because I'm so paranoid about not being paid. And I can't afford to, you know, have any bad debts, because my own cash flow situation is so tight. I can't afford to have bad debts. So what that does is it means that I have to effectively reduce my margins in order to encourage people to give me cash on delivery, and those that can afford it, of course, are quids in, because, you know, they're getting the extra discount for me to give them that incentive to pay me on time or to pay me on time.
I didn't know you got discount for paying on time, did you, Sally? Shot himself in the foot now.
Well, I don't know. Well, I think I think, you know, it's an interesting. I mean, for me, I've had to go down that route, and so my margins are being cut, and in order to survive, you know, I'm having to box clever to try and keep cash, and the cash is absolutely king.
So absolutely. I mean, it sounds like these two biggest challenges coming out of the recession are one around cash flow,
definitely,
and the other around the money to invest to be able to move forward. I mean, are there other challenges which are really making themselves shown? I mean, obviously demand is down a bit, although you're experiencing that to different degrees.
It's quite interesting. Again, last October, when we really came into this crash, you had lots of newspaper reports about how much Britain was in debt and how much personal debt everybody had. And then it was encouraging people really to repay back their credit cards, because we can probably all remember the day a year or so ago when you were getting 1-2 a day invitations through your post to open a credit card, and they were at such good rates. Now, I think a lot of people, around October, Christmas, and even I think now, between January and March, if they have put anything on a credit card, have opted for paying that back before they have life's little luxuries, like maybe going out to the pub, going for a meal, or just generally socialising. So in a way, was that driven by the newspapers and the TV, and especially with the pubs, the relentless, you know, boozy Britain? Mm. And it's like, well, hold on a pub, you can't get too drunk. A, you can't afford it. B, you won't be served.
Yeah. But it's that discretionary spend which is really being hammered.
Yes.
But yeah. Maybe because people are being told that they should reduce it rather than because
yes.
they really, really need to
and
reduce it.
And the fear of, you know, were we all going to have a terrible crash? Were we all going to lose our jobs? Now maybe we're coming out of that. Pray we get a good summer. Mm. Might change. The good fuel factor might come back. But it's still very doom and gloom at the moment, really, I think.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the other big challenge is you know, we touched on it earlier about is marketing. You know, I mean, the businesses that are surviving and doing well are the ones that just keep coming up with new ideas and new initiatives. But that in itself
takes money.
It takes money, and it takes time. And it takes energy, actually.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're, and I don't know what you two feel, but I mean, certainly I feel that that, you know, as you get sort of ground down into the sort of trying to manage your business in the tough times. Actually, trying to motivate yourself to actually market yourself in an interesting way can be quite tough. Mm.
And know, obviously, all the advertising revenues have shot up. I mean, you quite often get phone calls: "Would you like to advertise here, there, and everywhere?" But it's quite difficult to gauge how does that bring you any trade in. It's do you advertise? Do you do word of mouth? Or do you go for all-out, wham-bam offers?
Yeah.
But then it's, is that a good idea or is that a bad idea?
Okay. Well, let's take a pause there and get perhaps a bit of a regional overview, because I think what this says is about some of the issues we've started touching on. And earlier today I spoke to Taste of the West, which is an organisation near Exeter that promotes local and regional produce. And John Sheaves, who I spoke to, is the chief executive. John, how is the food and industry sector bearing up in the recession in the South West as a whole?
Well, the picture is actually quite mixed. On the one hand, local and regional, in other words, provenance-based food products, food and drink products, are holding up actually quite well in the recession, with the exception perhaps of the organic market, which has seen a bit of a dip in recent months as consumers are turning away from quite costly alternatives. But the provenance-based market, in other words, local and regional, is holding up actually quite well. So that's on the one side. That's a good point. But what we are seeing, I think, at the moment, is a lot of uncertainty out there. And I think the industry is going through a fairly dormant or quiet phase because they're not quite sure how the country is going to react post-election. So I think the whole industry is waiting on May the 6th or whenever the election is going to be to see who's going to get in, or a combination of who's going to get in and more importantly, what's going to happen, what sort of initiatives they're going to carry out.
That's interesting that you say that the organic sector is perhaps struggling a bit more while local and regional food is doing okay, because the perception would be that you pay a premium on local food.
Well, that's a perception rather than a reality. Don't get me wrong, there are some local products which are premium based and therefore if a consumer feels that they don't want, that they're going to try and tighten their belts, then obviously that sector is going to suffer. But actually, a lot of local products by definition are not expensive. They are very affordable. And what we are seeing are consumers mixing and matching their purchases. Yes, they are trading down on some items, but actually they are very willing to support local and regional producers. They see it as very important value, and those ethical values they don't seem to be turning away from at the moment. And so, certainly if they're not going to eat out so much, and that's certainly a trend which is seems to be continuing into 2010, then they're going to want to replace that with some good quality cuisine at home, and scratch cooking is on the up. In other words, people cooking with very good quality raw ingredients and doing their own thing.
So the eating out sector is perhaps feeling it more, because I suppose it's more of a luxury.
Yeah, I think the pub sector, I think everybody, I think, realises is going through a very, very difficult time. You're seeing more freehold and leasehold signs up outside of pub premises, I think more than we've ever seen it before. Not to say that if an establishment is doing a very good job that they're not doing well, because there are some fantastic eateries out there now, or to coin that horrible phrase, the gastropub, they are doing actually quite well if they are doing a good job, and there's some very good ones out there, and certainly they've come up in standards in the last few years. And one of the reasons they're doing well is because they've got very good service, very good quality chefs, and using very good quality local ingredients, and that tends to be a recipe for a successful eatery. But there are a lot of other pubs which are not doing very well and are going to the wall, and mainly because they're going for a volume-based market, and that market is saying, no, we'll eat at home, thank you very much.
Right, well, that's interesting. I mean, that's very much been almost a niche argument, hasn't it, in the past? But it sounds like it's becoming more and more mainstream, and if you focus on local produce, you will do better.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That is where local and regional food is at the moment, is that it is moving very, very rapidly away from the niche sector into mainstream consumption, and that is quite interesting. That's why supermarkets are wanting to get involved in it. That's why you've seen a proliferation of farmers' markets, of farm shops. I mean, in the southwest and certainly in Somerset, we've seen farm shops spring up in lots of different postcodes now, and certainly if you haven't got one in your own postcode, you've probably got one within easy driving distance. So the rural sector has actually been quite well catered for in the last few years. There's still quite a challenge for the industry to reach the urban population, and that is volume based, obviously. But yeah, local and regional food is becoming much more mainstream now.
You mentioned the election earlier on and the uncertainty that's creating. What sort of measures would you like to see a new government taking to improve and enhance the prospects of the food and drink industry?
Very interesting one. I think I'd repeal the most ridiculous piece of legislation in the budget yet, which is the tax on cider drinkers. I think that's absolutely crass thinking of the most outrageous order.
I think you'll get a big cheer in Somerset for that.
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? Talk about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. I mean, yes, there is. We all know, society knows, there is an issue with alcoholism and drinking, particularly amongst the younger generation. We all know that. But to actually hit the cider industry in this way is crass nonsense. It really is. We've certainly sent representations to London, and I actually think the industry itself should fight this all the way. And because one of the things that that I think Kenneth Clark said of the Conservatives was that one of the reasons why this actually got through was because there wasn't a strong enough voice to counter it, and so therefore it was allowed through. Well, if that is the case, then I think that is a duty on government to actually liaise with the industry before they carry out this kind of legislation. I think this is absolutely deplorable democracy to suddenly use this kind of sledgehammer, you know, the politician's tool to crack a nut like this.
So is there anything more structural that you'd like to see changed as well?
Yeah, sorry, I've rather gone on one particular pet subject, but I mean, certainly the level of bureaucracy in the food industry has increased under the last administration, or present administration, and I think that we would like to see a much more streamlined and refined approach to administration and bureaucracy in particularly local and regional government. And with that, hopefully, an easier way of gaining what grants there are out there. I mean, there are some European grants out there, but to try and get hold of some of these is incredibly difficult at the moment. It's a minefield out there. And we do need to keep driving forward this industry, because innovation is the absolute key to the future and the development of the local and regional food industry.
And on that subject of innovation, do you want to say something about your academy programme?
Yeah, I mean, we launched our Food and Drink Academy, which is a Taste of the West initiative, in January. And the idea behind it is a virtual entity. It's not no bricks and mortar. We haven't invested in a great big building anywhere. But the idea is that we can now offer, through partnerships that we've gained with other institutions around the region, we can now put on trade development courses, marketing courses, PR courses, all the different type of courses that producers need in order to develop their businesses in the food and drink sector. Now, the advantage of us doing this is that we can then link it in with the rest of our trade program, which is meet the buyer type events, our distribution hub, which we've developed based down at Exeter, which is now going absolutely full bore in terms of getting distribution of products out to the marketplace. So we can back all of this up with that as well. We have our own benchmarking program as our awards program annually. 1,200 products go through that, so we benchmark those. So the idea of the academy is to back up all of this other work that we're doing, and it's going to be put on a market needs basis. So when the market turns around and says, "I need this," we'll be able to put the market in front of the producers and really help them with very focused workshops and seminars.
So if people want more details about that, where should they go?
They should come straight to us or come onto our website, which is www.tasteofthewest.co.uk.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much for that, John.
No problem.
So that was John Sheaves of Taste of the West talking there about the effect of the recession on the food and drink industry in the Southwest as a whole, and obviously seeing local produce as one of the strengths of parts of the sector, although at the same time it is Taste of the West and they are there to promote local food, so he would say that, wouldn't he? Heather, does that bear out with you? How important do you think local produce is in the market as a whole?
Especially for the fruit and veg, people definitely look for English, Devon and Somerset. So in season, if you can get it, it's fantastic. Even when people come in the shop, tourists or locals, they're looking for something local. We do very well with Rose Farm from Somerset, Exmoor, and all their things. So people do look for it, and it's a small market, but once they find something they like, instead of buying a Branston pickle for £1.10, if they find a Rose Farm pickle for £1.50 or £1.60 and they like it, they'll buy it. It's on quality, and people will may treat themselves to that. So yes, we do see a lot of people come back time and time again for the same product because they like it and it's local.
But don't you think it's still a very small, it's still a small percentage of overall market of people shopping?
Oh yes, I think. If you're looking for a cauliflower and you want a cauliflower and all you can get is from France and not English because English is twice the price, then money will win over. But when various things are in season, if you've got strawberries from Spain or strawberries from Somerset and they're roughly the same price, people will go for strawberries from Somerset because they like to feel that they are supporting the local area. Because they do realise, and I think there's been a real groundswell, that if people don't use local shops, they will lose them. And I mean, you've just got to look at maybe the Notley Arms. They've lost their only outlet there. So I think people do realise now you have to use it or you lose it.
Because a lot of people have sort of talked that talk, haven't they, for quite a while. But you think that that is really coming into fruition now, that people are getting the message and they are using the local shops more.
I think partly, but I still think there's a huge number of people who, if they are at the supermarket, say for instance, and I'm just thinking about guys, you know, if they're there, they'll buy their wine there. They're not going to say, "Well, I'm going to do my shop, then I'll go and see Guy and buy my wine," necessarily.
Yeah.
Which is what they should be doing, really.
Sure. But let's get back to the local issue and the local produce, because Sally, I mean, you don't really promote having local local ingredients.
I've never agreed with doing that. It's the same with organic, it's the same with free range. I've always used it. You know, I've been cooking for 20 years and I've always been very, very careful about where I've sourced things, about my ingredients and everything, and I just think it's become too much of a fad. and a thing of saying, of just making a great big thing about the fact that you're using, everybody should be using good ingredients, and therefore why make a big thing about it? So, and most people know, because I've been around for quite a long time doing stuff, people know that when they come to me that they're going to get food that is well sourced, and it's, where possible, it's local.
Well, good for you is fresh, really, more than anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the freshest possible flavours.
Yeah. And we shop almost every day, you know, and we do try and get a lot of our stuff in with you. We do shop in all the shops, and we try and sort of spread it around so that everybody gets some of our business. Mm. And, you know, I have people that grow stuff for me, and we use the butcher. And so, you know, but there are some things that we can't get in with you, so we have to go somewhere else. But as far as possible, we do it, and we do it on a, you know, on a daily basis, almost, that it's as fresh as it can be. We don't have much space for storage. We have the tiniest freezer. We don't use frozen food. Those are things that are really important and always have been. So it's not something that I want, you know, I see any need to make a song and dance about, because I just think it's just is.
And
how it is.
But then that really depends on your customer base knowing.
Yes.
Innately, almost, that is what you do.
Yeah.
And you don't need to therefore shout about it.
No.
But new customers wouldn't necessarily know that.
No, but I still don't feel the need to make a song and dance about it.
Okay. I mean, Guy, with you, it's obviously a bit different, because there aren't that many wine producers in Somerset.
No, there aren't. There are a few. But, I mean, like Sally said, I mean, you know, my first criteria for putting a bottle of wine on the shelf is, does it taste good? Is it good value for money? And so, I don't push organic, for example. I mean, I have plenty of organic wines, but I don't have a section which says these are organic. Mm. You know, I base my buying criteria on, do I know about the producer? Do I understand what his ethics are and his philosophy in making wine? And does it taste good? And if it happens to be organic and it happens to come from a vineyard down the road, then great. But if it doesn't, it doesn't find its way on my shelf. And I think with English wine, I mean, I think that things are definitely improving. And for the last 2 years, I've been working with an uncertified organic vineyard on the ex-estuary called Pebble Bed. But they've had three now, really poor harvests, that they've kept all their produce to sell direct, because that's where they're, obviously there's more profit in that for them. So I haven't been able to get hold of the stock. But I think the local thing is really important. And I mean, from a business point of view too, I think, you know, actually having the opportunity to make something, be a primary producer, is a huge advantage, you know, when you're actually dealing with customers and marketing yourself. So actually I've set about trying to make my own cider. Which I had a crack at last year. So far, the results don't look too good. But I think, you know, my long term plan is to produce something, to be a primary producer, to sell alongside, you know, what I'm importing from, you know, from Europe and further afield. Because I strongly believe that isn't going to be a fad. It's going to be a very, very strong demand from consumers to have local products. And I think as that whole movement gains momentum, and it doesn't just become something that people think is something that's a bit of on left field, that actually becomes mainstream, it's going to be really important to have something that you've got provenance, you know, you can say this is made, and I know exactly how it's made, and I know where it comes from. And I think all those things are really important. Mm. And I have that philosophy, you know, with all of the wines that I put into the shop. Mm. You know, I have to understand, you know, where they're coming from and who produces them, to be able to sell them confidently.
So quality is king in two respects, both in terms of the service that you give and the product.
I think service, I, personally, from my point of view, I mean, from what I've seen, you know, the little time I've been in business on my own, service is by far and away the most important thing. If you give good service, people will keep coming back and want to come back, and they want that experience. So I think that's a really, really important thing, particularly for small community shops, because if we don't offer a different service, then really we're not really offering anything that's particularly different to running down the road to the supermarket, where often, you know, we can all be beaten on price. So service is absolutely paramount. And quality, I think, is obviously equally important. because otherwise if the quality's not good, people aren't going to come back anyway. Mm. As much as they like you and want to use your service, if the quality's not there, then your business isn't going to be successful. So those two things go really hand in hand, I think.
Mm. And does that resonate with you, Heather?
Oh, definitely. I think that's the wonderful charm of Wiver Liscombe, especially of a Friday and a Saturday. And as Sally says, most of the shops in Wivy share the same customers. You get people coming in from the villages that will park for free. They'll do the butchers, the post office, the Wivy larder. They stop off for a spot of lunch. And they might go to the wine shed. We share quite a few customers ourselves. And it's a lovely atmosphere. And you'll always bump into somebody you know. You'll have a chat. You put a smile on your face, which is priceless. And even in a rainy day, you'll always have a discussion about the weather. And I think that's what's unique, and it's what people really enjoy. I mean, I had an anecdotal from an older lady the other day who'd, as most people do, have gone to Waitrose because it's new to see what it's like. And we said, oh, we haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. And she said, oh, I have been naughty. She said, I went to Waitrose. She said, and I did a shop. And she said, it's lasted me over 2 weeks. So how that can be fresh, I don't know. And she said, and I realised I haven't been out. I haven't seen people. Mm. So she's kind of reverting back to her old shopping habits. I think she will still go to Waitrose, but maybe on the special occasion. But a lot of the feedback we've had from people going to Wellington Waitrose is, it's very expensive, it's nice, but it's very expensive. Mm. And they don't take into account their time, which is precious, and how much it costs you to travel there. And we've all done it when we've been supermarket shopping, the impulse buy, and then 2 weeks later it's still sat in your fridge and you haven't eaten it and you throw it away.
Yep.
Plus they don't know when you go there, nobody's there to say hello, how are you today?
And also what I've noticed in Waitrose, because when they sent their literature out before they opened, it was a big thing about using local farmers and local, all the rest of it, local food is really important to us. And when you go there, in the fruit and veg section, there is a tiny, tiny section on the left which says our farm. And there are about six products that are produced locally. And the rest of it is all imported from, abroad. And that is what was particularly noticeable to me, because I was really disappointed. I just thought, here's an opportunity. They're saying they're going to do this, and actually they're really not.
It's paying lip service, isn't it? And that's where you were on about people jumping on the bandwagon or free range and locally sourced.
Yeah.
When you get to a big supermarket, they can say it, but they don't actually say the percentage of items in our shop are.
Okay, well, let's take another pause there and hear from a local producer that is supplying to Waitrose and doing quite well out of it. We heard this week that that local business has had a lot of success supplying the named supermarket in Wellington that recently opened, and they're now going to be supplying another 10 of its branches. So this morning I called Styles Ice Cream at Brodhuish to find out a bit more.
David Baker, you're the Managing Director of Styles Ice Cream. You've got quite a success story, I understand, with your supplies to Waitrose.
That's correct. Waitrose came to us last autumn, and following very successful discussions and showing the product, we're now in 11 stores.
So they came to you and found you?
That's right.
Which isn't quite how people would see it, I guess, with the supermarkets.
It's very unusual.
Do you know what made them come to you?
I believe that it's because we have a product that's novel and different, and we're attracting a different customer, and they can see that there's possibilities for them.
So when you say a different customer, what do you mean?
Well, Waitrose are all about the top end of the marketplace and quality and having products that a lot of other people might not have. And they have them so that the customers get a lovely wide choice. And hence, they've looked at the Slim U, because we milk down here, our Andrew Speed milks for us. He milks a lot of sheep, and then we make a low-fat, low-calorie product from it. So you get a product that's not only suitable for people with cow's allergies, but you also get a product that's a low-fat, low-calorie, whereas you would take a dairy maybe at 14%, a normal dairy ice cream. This is 2.1. And instead of being 300 calories, you're looking at 75, but we've done it all naturally. We've just used whole milk and a little bit of sheep's milk powder.
So it is quite a unique product.
It is. We've actually invented it. And what is interesting with it, it's 2.5 times what a dairy would have in vitamins and minerals. So you're lower in the fat, you're much lower in the fat, much lower in the calories, but the vitamins and minerals are 2.5 times what you get in a dairy.
So is this your first supermarket contract?
It is, but I did the other day at a big trade show actually turn down Tesco's and Sainsbury's.
Wow, that's quite something to actually turn them down. Is that because of volumes or?
Well, their national buyer came and talked to us and wanted to talk, and I said it's for small companies like us. It's too dangerous to trade with people like that. Waitrose have a completely different way of looking after their small producers.
That's interesting. So you initially started supplying the Wellington store.
That's right.
Have the sales gone through the roof there and exceeded forecasts?
It's not that it's gone through the roof. It's done what we would expect of it in the winter time, being that type of frozen product. It's still a product that sells strongest in the summer. But we've had from there 5 customers ring up over the moon because they were people who had... their children had intolerances.
So it's fitting them very well.
It is. It was like last year. We had an inquiry from Malta, and we now supply the Slim U to Malta, and also Spain. Portugal, and we also supply places like Harrods, and Harvey Nicks are about to come on. So it's expanded, and we would now be supplying nationally about 500 shops.
So what's the speed of this growth curve that you're on? Where were you, say, 5 years ago?
We made the ice cream, the sheep's ice cream. We started doing it 22 years ago, but we spent a lot on packaging and presentation, and then going out and actually marketing it 2 years ago. And from there, it's just rocketed.
So it really is in the marketing?
It's in getting the product absolutely right, because we've had, you know, a lot of years getting that right. And then it was in the marketing presentation and getting out there and working quite hard. I mean, when we started that first year, we spent 122,000. The year before last we spent 75,000, and then this year we spent 70.
Does this mean that you're riding the recession quite well?
The wholesale has got a 43% increase.
Remarkable. In the last year?
Yes.
That's very good.
Yes.
And that really comes down to the marketing, you feel?
There's marketing, product, all of it goes together. And probably one of the most important things is the staff here paying attention and really beyond the detail. You know, it all goes together.
So if you were talking to other food and drink businesses in Somerset and they were asking you for any tips to survive the recession and get through the next few years, what would your top two be?
My top one would be consolidate. Concentrate on what you're being successful at, and then you might look to go to some professional help in really making sure you're presenting yourself well to the marketplace and delivering to the marketplace what they want. The other thing I think is very important is you've got to have a look and see what your competitors aren't doing. For instance, we do a delivery to 250 shops ourselves in the area, and through the summer we'll deliver 7 days a week, whereas a lot of other people won't. And it's customer is king. Whatever they want, they basically have got to get.
Okay, so that was David Baker from Styles Ice Cream talking about this, their recent success story, increasing their supplies to Waitrose, but not just Waitrose, also a lot more outlets across the country. And talking about the importance of marketing there, obviously they've spent a lot of money on marketing in the last 2 years, but is that enough in itself, or does it need more than just the marketing?
Marketing will get people to try your product. We've all seen it on TV, the new chips that come out, Red Sky. But people will try it. If they like it, they'll go back for more. If they don't like it, you'll see it's delisted within 6 months. So you've got to have something to back up all the marketing.
So it comes back to that quality, that underlying quality, really.
Yes, definitely.
Sally, any thoughts on that? I mean, how much do you market what you do?
I mean, not directly. I mean, I've always pretty much had a policy of no advertising. I mean, I've done a little bit. I've done stuff in the Word magazine, but that's quite selective, because I think it's important to only market in things that actually have an overall sort of similar kind of overview of what you're doing.
Right.
So that's why I've not done it in sort of other things. But again, it is quite hard to judge how much you get back from that in terms of what it's cost. I mean, I pretty much always relied on word of mouth as being the best form of advertising, and obviously that doesn't cost you anything. I mean, I have been lucky in the past with businesses where I've had some very nice sort of national coverage in newspapers and things, and obviously it makes a huge difference with that. Mm. And we've now, you know, we're in the new Good Food Guide which hopefully will make a difference, because that will obviously hopefully right. will you know, will spread the sort of the market further afield. We've already had, you know, seen a return from that, and people from London who will look at that and then obviously pick you in that area if they're coming to stay, and then you'll get you know, you get sort of people.
So that's a form of endorsement in a way, isn't it? That's more
but
valuable.
It's something you don't pay for. You're not paying to go in that guide. So obviously people know that it's people's own sort of opinion about your quality and things. So hopefully...
I mean, we've probably all been pestered recently by people ringing up wanting to advertise. But like you say, it's definitely word of mouth. And it's the same with the Bear. Mm. The Camera Good Beer Guide, they choose you. You don't, a Rue Guide or something, pay to go in it. Each year they come around and it's just normal people that enjoy beer. And they will choose you. And we were lucky this year to be finalists again for the Somerset Camera Pub of the year. But for sustained growth, I think you're right. It's word of mouth, and you can grow gradually. And if people come back and they enjoy what you're doing, other than throwing a lot of money at it, then it's not working. And then that's when people tend to go bust or get into real difficulties.
Okay, Guy, what about you? I mean, I think you had a background in marketing of wine, didn't you?
Well, I was a sales and marketing director. Very grand title, meant nothing. I have had a background in marketing. I was involved with selling to the supermarkets, and that's the motivation for me starting my business, was I couldn't stand anything the supermarkets stood for. Mm. And I used to sit in front of the buyer from Tesco's and bite my tongue. I've sort of done the worm that's turned, really, I guess. But for me, I mean, I think the biggest thing is aligning myself to complementary businesses. So I because of the type of business that mine is, and it's very niche, you know, I'm not selling, three for a tenner. You know, I'm selling things that have, you know, cost money. I mean, albeit not a huge amount. I mean, you can still buy a bottle of wine for £6, it's still in relative terms, when the average price of a bottle of wine is still, you know, it's hovering around £4. Mm. You know, my bottom layer is £2 more expensive. So I have to rely on on encouraging people to experiment. So I do an awful lot of events, you know, tasting events, aligning myself with, you know, marketing myself with businesses that I think have got that type of market, you know, that would be interested in this type of product. So I do very, very little advertising, and probably, you know, will not do any unless it was something where I knew there was a definite, you know, there was a definite return. It's not the kind of thing I speculate because it's expensive, and I can use that money better elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I do a lot of tasting events, so I'm always opening a lot of bottles, which is expensive in itself.
Yeah.
Although I do take a fair few home with me.
Always a peril in your trade, I should think.
never afraid to take my work home.
Eat or drink the profits.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much for coming in. That has virtually taken us up to the end of the programme. It's been very illuminating and interesting to find out more about your businesses and how you've been faring and the strategies you've been adopting for getting through the recession. Before we go, let me just plug the Bath Place summer season in Taunton. They are going to be rerunning the festival and fair which they have previously run, and they have put out a call for artists to participate in that. So if you are interested in exhibiting and taking part in the Bath Street Festival, then you need to call Beth Atkinson of the Taunton Town Centre Company on 01823 324 050, and that is for the events taking place on Saturday the 15th of May and Saturday the 19th of June. Next week's Somerset Is Go show will be looking at legal services and what they can do to help your business get through the recession and to survive. Don't forget that this show will be repeated on Saturday at 12 noon, and that the podcast of the show will be available on our website very shortly afterwards. So that is all from us. Thank you once again to my guests Guy, Heather and Sally for coming in and talking about their businesses. And thank you to you for listening to Somerset Is Go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Somerset Is Go!
Kissing man like a long walk home when the music stops. Take a tip from me, took it to the park. When you're on your own, it's a long walk home. Well, if they follow you, don't look back. Like Dylan in the movies, on your own. If they follow you, it's not your money that they're after, boy, it's you. Pure, easy listening, settle down on the pillow soft. When they've all gone home, you can concentrate on the ones you love. You can concentrate, hey, now they've gone. But if they follow you, don't look back, like Dylan in the movie, on your own. If they follow you, it's not your money that they're after, boy, it's you.
worth the worry, I would do the same. If we all went back to another time, I will love you over. I will love you over. I will love you. If they follow